You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
The only way we're signing this is if there's penetration. We don't care who or how. There has to be something's going into somewhere in this office.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas, this is the Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator Ryan Estrada. And now your host. He doesn't celebrate Pride Month, but he has seen the Broadway production of Wicked twice, so that at least makes him an ally, Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Welcome back to another episode. Thanks for hanging out, guys. If you like what you hear, like what you see, however you're consuming this content, please tell a friend, let them know, rate us, review us on your favorite podcast app, wherever you listen, and make sure you follow the Madness Comic Network, which we are now part of, and we got some cool stuff coming down the pipeline with them. Full video content shows, full network coming with a huge, very wide breadth of content regularly throughout every single day. So just keep an eye on that channel, and you're going to see some cool stuff coming soon. I'm working on a couple other things I'm going to try to get out there for you with some frequency again, maybe a couple old shows I'm going to bring back if I have some time. It just depends on calendar, time. Yeah, what do? You know, I'm busy, but I'm here for you today, guys, and I'm here for you some other places coming up. If you're listening to this the day it comes out on Wednesday, I will be at Upstage Comedy Lounge in San Antonio, Texas this Wednesday, and then I will also be at Upstage Comedy Lounge this Sunday in San Antonio, Texas, and then at Remedy Hall in Comfort, Texas on the 25th. And if you're fans of the comic book Kill Stand, I will be at the Longview Comic Con the 28th and 29th in Northwest Texas. That's going to be a fun show. And we've got a ton of other conventions across the country we've booked, guys. So they haven't hit the calendar yet, but I'm going to get them worked up and all put on our website, inferno.earth. So if you're following the comic book, that's where you go for everything, inferno.earth, the website, or the Instagram page, inferno.earth. Tons of conventions, tons of stuff. We're working on number 3. It's coming out very soon. You'll see some pre-order availability coming up anytime. And we've been slowly leaking a couple pages for you, so get ready for what we got going on. And again, go to deesecomedy.com for all the stand-up comedy stuff, dates across the country, kicking off the summer tour, or late summer, fall tour in August in the Pacific Northwest. I'll be back in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana. Check the dates on the calendar for that. Tickets are going fast to some of those. We've got some really cool events coming back to some cities that I love performing in throughout the Northwest. So if you've been asking why I haven't been there, it's because you've been in fucking winter, and that sucks. I don't do winter in the Northwest. You guys know that. That's why I left that place. So hit me up in August and I'll be there. Other than that, that's it, guys. You know what to do. Follow the Instagram, hit up the websites, get all the info. And we are going to get into it with our guest today. I forget where he's coming from right now, but I know it's a very far away time zone. It's very different than where we, it might be the future. He might know, you know, if America's going to make it, or he might be in the past and not realize that we didn't make it. Please welcome to the show, Ryan Estrada. Ryan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, coming in live from Busan, South Korea, deep into the future.
You are,
and enjoying the future. It's nice here, you know.
How is it? How's America doing? What's the stock market like? Should I invest in Crystal Clear Pepsi or not?
Yeah, I really hope that that America does follow the future, because we are very much like right ahead of where you are, because just before, you know, Korea had a whole thing where we had an elected president decided he wanted to be a dictator and start destroying things, and then Korea like put a stop to it very quickly. So I'm hoping America follows suit.
Yeah,
and, follows our future.
Here's why I have no faith in that. because I think any president that's been president since probably Kennedy was a dictator in some way. So I think we're just stuck with the fact that we're in a system that our political figures just get to fuck us and do whatever they want, no matter what side of the aisle they're on. Mm-hmm. So I have no hope for the future of America as far as, they call him a president, but it's just a figurehead for the system that wants to make sure we, most people can't buy a house.
Yeah, well, that's why I love living in Korea, because there was a time like 2 years ago where every single living former president was in jail at the same time. And everyone who's been president since the last president has also gone to jails, and he's going to be going back for a long, long time. So it's you still get the terrible people in power, but then the people are like, yeah, screw you, buddy.
It's funny, every time someone talks about the president going to jail, I'm like, they all should. Have you heard about war crimes? Because every single one of them in my lifetime has committed a cornucopia of them. So let's put them in front of a war tribunal, and let's get these motherfuckers in prison, among other things that they have all done. But, then people yell at you because, you're not sucking the dick of whatever political party they suck the dick of. So, It's great. America's great. You're better off being somewhere else. I like Korea's thing where they put these people in jail.
It's really fun.
So much fun. So what made you flee the country? Are you a refugee? Are you originally from America?
Yeah, I come from Michigan. And I came here way back in 2002. And I was kind of a refugee then of the animation industry falling apart and everyone getting laid off, because I went to animation school, and the year I graduated was when like Disney shut down their entire 2D animation department. Everyone had no job. And I just was on Instant Messenger at 3 a.m. and a friend complaining, like, I don't know what to do. And a friend's like, did you hear about this thing in Korea where they're so desperate for teachers right now that they'll buy you a plane ticket and have an apartment waiting for you to teach English to kids who already know how to speak it? And I'm like, no, but I'm going to do it.
And that sounds like how you wake up in a bathtub full of ice with your kidney missing. Like, that doesn't. Yeah.
Well, it turned out all right. I heard about the job at 3 o'clock. I had a job at 4 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock, I Googled where is Korea. But I came out here doing that. But then I realized I love traveling the world so much that I'm like, I'm just going to keep doing this, keep traveling around the world, making, I can make comics from anywhere.
Yeah.
And so I moved to a new country every year for like a decade. But now my wife and I have been settled here in Busan for about another decade. So,
okay. So you're staying, that's where you're staying.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a period recently where I was trying to get back to America, and now I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know if I'm going to.
How is it integrating into Korea? Culturally, linguistically, how do you even, where do you start even trying to learn the language?
I am just incredibly spoiled here. It is such an easy life to lead. I still, after all this time, don't speak Korean. The alphabet is simple. I made a comic called Learn to Read Korean in 15 Minutes that literally, if anyone pauses this video and reads that comic, you will know how to read the Korean alphabet because it's so simple. That doesn't mean that you're going to know what it says. But when you walk around, you realize most of the signs are English words written in the Korean alphabet. Everyone, the reason they are so desperate for English teachers back in the day is that everyone here studies English, and I can speak English pretty much anywhere I go. And I always joked that if I ever need help, I just make the foreigner face, which is I just go like drop my jaw and look confused, and like 30 people come up and be like, what do you need? Can I help you? And it's very easy to live here. It's very easy to get around. The infrastructure is so amazing. Like anywhere I want to go in the city, I can walk out my door and there's four forms of public transportation that'll get me there in like 30 minutes for less than a dollar.
Yeah.
There's anywhere I want to go in the country, I can get there in like 4 hours for like $30. And everywhere I go is easy to get around and easy to do what I need to do. And yeah, it's spoiled life.
Yeah. What's like the biggest thing people would be surprised about Korea that, you know, from an outsider looking in, you know, that has like no frame of reference?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things that I've heard of people being surprised by that was shocking is I had a friend who came here to teach. And when she went back home, her parents were like, wow, it must be nice to be back and have electricity again. She's like, what are you talking about? Korea is one of the most advanced countries in the world, like the fastest internet in the world.
Yeah, it's like they seem like they're in the future. Like everything's, it's like it's like Blade Runner, but less dusty.
Yeah, but what I love is the balance of like, you can be in one of the most technologically advanced places, and like I always say that like in America people drive across the country to go to Vegas, whereas here, because they want to see the neon lights, like every building in Korea looks like that. It's just covered in lights and things. And so you'll see a building like that, and then right behind it is a mountain. You can climb it, and like you wouldn't know you're in civilization. Or like all the rivers are parks. Like you walk along all the rivers, and you can exit at any point and go be downtown, but you can just walk along the river and pretend you're not in a city.
Yeah.
And like there's you can from my house in Busan, which is the opposite side of the country, I can ride my bike to Seoul and never have to cross in front of a car, because it's just set up in such a way that like both city and nature are both respected in a way.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. They would have, now like communication wise, does most people speak English or there's like a, you know, an ability to at least communicate somehow?
Yeah. I mean, everyone has some level of English, and some of you might have to speak very broken English and the few words of Korean that you know. I really should have learned it at this point, having come here in 2002, but I'm just not smart enough to learn another language. I've tried, and I'm just not there. A lot of people assume that I speak it because I made that Learn to Read Korean comic, and like millions of people have learned to read Korean from that, and I'm like, oh no, I have no idea what it means.
Yeah, that comic probably isn't even accurate. I just made that up. There's nothing, it's not scholastically sound at all.
But the alphabet is very much like there's fewer letters. They always make the same sound. You're never having to be like, sometimes C makes this sound, sometimes it makes this sound. It's just the alphabet is so simple that like now when I see a sign in two languages, I find it easier to read the Korean one than my own alphabet.
Oh, interesting. So do you ever, how often do you come back to America, if ever?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to come every year to do like book tours and see the family and stuff like that. And there's a lot of events I usually go to. We were planning to be back right now, my wife and I, but after seeing like people arrested at the border and sent to prisons and other countries and stuff, I'm like, is it really safe to bring my banned book writing wife to America to go do talks against fascism? And we decided it just wasn't safe and canceled the trip.
Is your wife Korean?
Yep.
So, and then are you able to, is there like a path to citizenship in Korea for you, or would you have to, how does that work? Are you just on?
I just have a marriage visa. Simple. Just renew it every 3 years. I mean, I could get a more permanent residency, but it's so much work, and you got to learn Korean, and that's hard. So just go every 3 years and renew it.
They make you learn the language, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. At least, you know, it seems like a weird, it seems like a thing that people are very divided on, like learning the language of a place you move to. And it seems like that should be something that if you're going there, you should strive to do a little bit. But it is, it's like, especially if you want to be integrated fully, you know, learning language does make a difference. But at least you get like a full-time interpreter for you. I assume your wife speaks Korean.
Yeah. She really is always like, so when are you going to learn Korean? I'm like, I've tried. I'm not smart.
Hey, get that Duolingo, man.
Yeah.
Wasn't, that it was not enough. I mean, have you tried? Is it that challenging, or it's just not even, doesn't even make sense?
Yeah, I've tried. Whenever I learn a language, it's always like, oh, this is so hard. And then you get into like conjugation and sentence order, and I'm like, oh God,
yeah,
I'm smart
yeah.
enough for this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, you know, at least, you know, you're learning basic phrases or basic words that you can use is nice. Like, so I mean, I grew up in a big Latino family, and I spoke Spanish pretty well when I was a kid, because my grandparents didn't speak anything, but I lost it as I became older and moved away and didn't use it for years. And then now living in Texas again, I'm like, oh, I use this now. And it's like, you know, like it's not perfect, but I can, you know, get by. I can, you know, so, yeah, I'm not conjugating things perfectly and stuff like that always, but it's like, yeah, we get it. We understand.
Well, in all my year, like I said, I was moving to a new country every year for a decade. And so like, if I've been in Korea this long and haven't learned it, like I couldn't learn a language every time. I lived in India, I lived in Mexico, I spent time in Africa, all over the place. And like, my whole thing when I was traveling was I just threw myself into every situation, didn't do any research. I was like, no spoilers. I don't want to know what I'm getting into. And I did end up like getting into a lot of trouble. I was like, got lost in the Maasai Mara and nearly eaten by lions. I got thrown from a moving train by the police in India. Ended up sleeping on a park bench in a typhoon in Japan, just because I was completely unprepared for every situation. But doing so and realizing that I got out of all those situations with, just with a story. I kind of became prepared for every situation because, I realized if I can handle, you know, all these near death experiences, then like a language barrier isn't going to stop me. I can figure out what I need to do.
Yeah, you're like the Forrest Gump of animators. You've lived all these different lives. What was your favorite place? I mean, yeah, you've been to a ton of countries across the world. What was your favorite? I mean, obviously, you have an affinity for North or South Korea, but beyond that.
For living, I'd say Korea, just because of the infrastructure. But like for travel, I loved India because India is so diverse that you can travel a block and be in a new culture, new language, new food, new kind of clothes. And so I would just travel across the country, and every single hour of the journey was like traveling to a new country. And I got to see a lot of things that you could never see anywhere else. Like I went to Karni Mata, this temple full of rats, where people believe that their ancestors are brought back as rats. So they've been treated like gods for generations. And like you go in there, and all the rats climb all over you and share your food with them. And I went to the Dalai Lama's house while I was there. And I went to like tiger forests and all these things that are, you know, experiences you can't have anywhere else. So that's a great place to travel.
How is the Dalai? Still hanging in there, still doing good?
It seemed to be all right. I mean, this was years ago I was there, and he was actually traveling when I got there, so I didn't get to hang out. Where he lives is a really great place because, like, people from every part of the world go there, and then they, like, open restaurants. So you can have, like, the best version of whatever food you want you've ever had made by people from that country. And, this was, like, over a decade ago, so I'm sure it's completely different now, but when I went there, it was so cheap that like one of my favorite experiences was they have volunteer opportunities where all the refugees from Tibet they ask for like a volunteer like English, not so much English teacher, but just like, we need someone to talk to you for a day to practice our English. And so I was hanging out with them, and like I expected like these serious like solemn monks, and but they're like, yo, dude, you come from America. You like Eminem? I love Eminem. And so I'm sitting there chatting with them, and I asked them, like, what kind of food they like? And they're like, oh, we eat this. And they showed me it's like a bag of flour. And I'm like, oh, do you eat anything else? They're like, this is all we had. And I'm like, do you like this food? This, like, we've never had any of that. So I'm like, pick any restaurant you want. And they picked an Italian restaurant. And I just went there and said, give me everything on the menu. And it cost me like $20. And they got to try every single item on the menu.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
Wow. Yeah, the fucking fettuccine Alfredo blowing their mind over there. Oh, yeah. India's a weird. I've always wanted to go to India. I got a buddy who's Indian, and like, you know, he lived there for a while. He has family that lives there. Like his parents grew up there. He still goes back there regularly, and he always tells me, he's like, don't go to India unless you know someone. He's like, you got to know someone there. Otherwise, it's really easy to get taken advantage of.
Yeah, I mean, it's an adventure because you never know what you're going to get. Every neighborhood's different. But yeah. I was there working at a call center.
It's got to blow people's minds. You're like, no, I am in India. They're like, yeah, okay, buddy. You're like, you're transcending the stereotype.
Well, my job, this was early on when I was like, wasn't making money at comics yet. So I was looking for jobs overseas to have day jobs while I made comics. And I was hired by a Citibank call center to go train their I wasn't doing the phone calls. I was there to train their employees how to deal with Americans. But when I got there, I found out that they were too busy taking calls to ever attend any trainings. And I was there only to look good on paper so they could tell Citibank that they had an American on staff.
Yeah.
And so I just went stir crazy and I just went mad for like 2 years.
Yeah. You're the DEI hire for the week. what was the worst place you ever stayed in?
For me, the weird thing about my travels is that, like, because I've been through so many experiences, for me, the worst experience is when everything is good and just fine. Like, because for me, like, stories are my currency. So I mentioned, like, sleeping on a bench in a typhoon. That was very early in my travels when I first came to Korea. There was a thing called a visa run where you had to change your visa in Japan. But they'd have you start working illegally first and then like ship you off to get your visa. And they didn't want me to miss class. So they sent me on a Korean holiday and I got there and found out that the Korean consulate is of course closed on Korean holidays. And I also had just graduated college and moved overseas and hadn't been paid yet. So I had no money and ended up stuck in Japan. And then the next day there was a typhoon and all the flights were canceled. So I'm stuck in Japan for a week with no money. And I end up sleeping on a park bench in a typhoon with the flu. And as I'm lying there, like feeling so sorry for myself, this kitten came up and went to sleep on my chest in a typhoon as I'm sleeping on a park bench. And all of a sudden I realize, wait a minute, this is the worst day of my life and I'm fine. What am I worried about? And I still tell that story decades later. So nowadays when I travel and things are awful, I'm like, this is so great. I'm going to tell this on a podcast one day. I'm going to go tell this at a comedy show one day. I'm going to make a comic about this. And for me, the worst experiences are like, oh, this is just like everything looks cool and the hotel's nice. And like, I have nothing to talk about. What am I going to tell a story about?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like outside of like force majeure, you know, like culturally it was, there was a divide or people weren't, the people weren't nice or it was like, you know, like, the food was terrible, you know, just bad experience, like outside of, you know, there's a natural disaster, you know, what are places where it just wasn't as welcoming as others?
I mean, everyone's been welcoming everywhere I go. The one place that I would say I eventually was just like, I have to leave here. Nothing to do with the country or the culture. It was specifically where I chose to live. I lived in a place called Zancudo Beach in Costa Rica, which Zancudo means mosquito. And I basically lived so far in the middle of nowhere, the jungle, that in order to go buy bread and milk, it was a 12-hour journey. I would have to leave on the only bus out at 6 a.m. and come back on the only bus back at 6 p.m. The supermarket was actually in another country. It was in Panama. And then during the rainy season, the peninsula I lived on would become an island and there were no buses. And just getting to the nearest neighbor took like an hour walk. I usually had a bike, but the roads were so bad that every time I rode a bike, the tire would blow and it would be a 12-hour trip to buy a new tire tube. Yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful place to live for a while. Like, I had monkeys in my trees. Monkeys would break into my house and steal bananas. And I'm like, you come in all you want, sir. I had, like, uh, I there were like gators around, and I could like go out the backyard and see like the Jesus lizards that run across the water, mm-hmm. and sloths and toucans and stuff. And it was beautiful. But after 6 months, I'm like, I need to see other human beings and be able to buy things. This has been great, but I cannot do this forever.
So what was the impetus for all the travel? Just running from demons, or what was it? You're trying to work in animation, which obviously you can make comic books from anywhere, but like, you know, also traveling and doing these things is expensive. So like, how did you make it work to be like, I want to be somewhere different every couple months and do this?
Well, I mean, it was really just a lot of people, when I was posting about all my travels, people are like, wow, this guy must be rich. And I'm like, no, I can't afford to live in America. Like if I go on this beach in Costa Rica, I spend $100 a month and live like a king. Like, yeah. But I just loved traveling. I'd never planned on traveling. I was always very like shy and reserved in school, and then once I went out and started traveling, I realized how much I loved it, and just I wanted to see the world. I wanted to have more stories to tell, like just as a storyteller. Like I started making comics when I was a baby. I decided I wanted to go pro when I was six and started submitting to newspapers, but they finally hired me when I was 16, and my comic was about an orange cat who's too lazy to chase mice. And that's because my only life experience was reading Garfield and trying to make comics.
Yeah.
But once I started traveling, I realized, oh, there's other things in the world that I can draw from. And I just really loved traveling. And so for the beginning, you know, it was a new year. I was in every country. And at first it was like, where can I get a job? Here's a teaching job. Here's a call center job. Here's this, here's that. I went to volunteer in Thailand after the tsunami, all these things. And eventually it got to the point where, like, when I was full-time making comics, it would just be like, I'd see a cute video of a sloth on YouTube and be like, hey, I'm going to move to Costa Rica and just go there and see what happens. And so, yeah, it was, I loved doing that. But eventually, after like a decade of doing that, it's just like every year having to be like, I have to start from scratch building a social circle, finding friends. And like, it gets harder and harder the older you get to, like, you know, show up in a new country and be like, does someone want to be my friend? And so now we've kind of settled back down and been in Korea for a while, where I kind of have a community, and I would love to travel more, but it's that's the scary part, is the having to be like, once again, starting from scratch socially.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can always, you know, vacation, you don't know, you know, instead of bivouac on an island outside of Belize for 6 months, you can just you know, buy a return ticket too, man. Getting into comic books, what was it, you know, you grew up in Michigan, so like, you were in America, you had American comic books and stuff like that. Were you reading like traditional comic books, or was it more like newspaper strips, like you said, like Garfield and stuff, or what were you consuming?
Yeah, like as a kid, like I said, baby, when I started, like, I started making comics before I could talk. My mom says that I learned to talk so I could tell her I was going to become a professional cartoonist. And at that time, yeah, it was the Sunday comics, like in the newspapers. And I was obsessed with that for the longest time. And eventually, like I said, got a job at the newspaper. And then as I started traveling, I started reading more graphic novels and things. Like web comics later on. And I try to take my influences from as many things as possible. And again, not just comics, but life experiences, movies, art, novels, storytelling, history, things like that. And try to put everything together. And I think that's why I'm kind of like for a long time I had trouble finding success or even finding an agent, because I had several meetings with agents where they yelled at me because it's like, what are you working on? I'm like, oh, I'm working on this thing that's kind of for adults, this thing that's for kids, this thing that's for teenagers. And they're like, you're not allowed to do that. And I'm like, what? They're like, you can't make like this for this type. Like, if you're a creator, you have one audience, if you make books for 8 to 12 year old boys, you make books for 8 to 12 year old boys, and that's it. That's all you're allowed to do. And I'm like, yeah. My brain doesn't work that way. I need to do all this. And luckily, I have an agent now, Janine Kamu, that just is like, yeah, make whatever you want. It's my job to sell it. And so now I'm able to, like, I make kids' books, I make young adult books, I make adult books, I make middle grade books, and just I love where I am now, that I can just take influences from wherever and whatever makes the comic I'm working on better.
So with you, where are the books you're doing? Where can people find these things? So it's, you know, are you independently producing stuff? Is it are you major distribution?
I mean, I do so many things. My two most recent books, No Rules Tonight and the follow-up that comes out this October, Good Old Fashioned Korean Spirit, are through Penguin, Penguin Workshop. My most popular book, Banned Book Club, and I've done several others through Iron Circus Comics. I also do like Garfield comics for Boom. I just did some Flash Gordon comics for Paper Cuts. I just work on so many things. I just... every year it's like 30 new things coming out from different publishers.
Yeah, that's great. The banned book club, that's a salacious title, especially in today's day and age. Tell us about that.
So Banned Book Club is that's my wife, Kim Hyun-suk. It's her true story. So a few years ago, my wife and I were hanging out, taking a stroll up the mountain behind her house, and she had just met some friends the day before, and she's like, oh, it reminded me of when I was hunted down by the secret police for smuggling banned books across the country. I'm like, wait, when you what? And she's like, ah, no big deal. We just read books and stuff. And I suddenly found out that my wife of years and friend of a decade had been a book smuggler under a dictator in 1980 South Korea. And so we made a book about it. And, you know, we, at that point, this is in 2017, it's like, well, this is an interesting bit of history that, you know, people aren't experiencing now, but they might, you know, find it interesting. And then by the time the book came out, not only was there a big wave of book banning in America, but this book became banned in several states. So yeah, it's a true story. That's the book that kind of, after decades of making comics that nobody read, like, that's the one that finally people noticed. And I always joke with my wife that she always had zero interest in making comics, but the second I collaborate with her, I find success. I'm like, I should have just been riding your coattails the whole time.
You got to know, man. That's why you hitched that wagon, right? Mm-hmm. The whole idea of banned books seems insane. I mean, I get it. I guess I get it a little more in countries like, and I say this without a lot of context, but like Korea, where, you know, there's a history of some more totalitarian rule, you know. But, you know, when it comes to like what's happening in America, it's like, what are we doing? What's, you know, and, you know, the crazy thing is, it's coming from both sides, where you have like the right, which wants to ban certain books they feel are, you know, too liberal. And then you have liberals wanting to like neuter Huck Finn because they say the N-word. And you're like, yeah, that's a context of the time, you know, like it's like, what are we doing trying to censor literature that has to do with our history?
Well, I mean, the people that are banning books, like they pretend to be members of communities. They pretend to be concerned parents, but they're not. I've met them. I've talked to them. In a couple years ago, 60% of all book bans in America were instigated by 11 people. I know most of them. They are weirdos. They are not parents in the communities they represent. A lot of times they drive in from another state because they're funded by organizations that profit from making public schools look bad and, you know, making the stock prices go up for the public schools that they own or invest in. And it's very much an organized political movement that tries to make itself look like this giant movement when it's really a handful of people that are getting funding from big organizations.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that. But I think you could say the same thing about almost anything happening in America right now, though. I mean, that's especially when it comes to anything that has to do with politics. You know, it's just some organization that's wants to ensure that, you know, the other side looks bad or a candidate looks good or that some agenda keeps people divided. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the name of the game in American politics today, unfortunately.
Yeah, but a lot of the people that are, you know, for banning books assume, you know, I'm very, you know, leftist, and a lot of people assume like, well, you must want all these books banned too. And I'm like, I absolutely do not. Like, I hope that Mein Kampf is in the library because there are people who are still following that playbook, and it's important to be able to read it and see what playbook they're following so that you know what you're up against. Like in Banned Book Club, one of the true stories that we talked about is that one of Hyun Suk's friends went to prison for reading the autobiography of Kim Il-sung, the founder of North Korea.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because he loved Kim Il-sung. It was because he supposedly lived in democracy. And when he read a book by a dictator, he's like, this is all the same stuff our president says. And so that's why he was arrested for it, because they didn't want him realizing that he didn't live in a democracy. And so it's very important to be able to read things. Like, there are so many books that, like, with horrible ideas in them that I think, should someone have written it? No. Should this publisher have given them money for it? No. But now that it's written, I hope it's in a library, because say that person runs for office, I want to know what they stand for. Say that publisher wants to publish me, I want to know what they stand for. And I don't want to have to give them money and reward what they wrote, but I would be happy to go to a library and see. So it's very important that knowledge is available and, you know, not censored. And yeah, I just think it's very silly to try and hide knowledge and ideas.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, the unfortunately, I think that's just what it's come to, is just suppressing what, you know, what giving your echo chamber what's great, and then suppressing information that goes against whatever someone's particular flavor may not enjoy, and just hammering people with that, you know. And then everyone feels self-righteous, and then everyone hates everyone else, and then, you know, we're in a fucked system that's floating into oblivion. Things are bleak out here, Ryan. I'm here to tell you, as a guy who's it's not good times. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I just, as for me, it's like, I personally am like free speech absolutist. I don't think there's no caveats in that for me. It's not what I enjoy. It's not what I think is good. It's not what I think is other people should hear. It's, you know, I mean, people complain about Twitter, I'm like, let it fly. It's Wild West. It's people's, you know, it's good to know who those people are and what their ideas are. And the only way to kind of help guide bad ideas is being able to share better ideas, not cutting people off from society, you know?
Well, I think there's a big difference between allowing speech to be available and platforming speech. Like I say, I hope Mein Kampf is in a library, but I also don't want to walk in and see a shelf like advertising Mein Kampf. Like that's a big difference to me. And so I think, like, you know, I wouldn't put you know, those things like that on my own website. If I, you know, if I had a magazine, I wouldn't publish things that I think are absolutely wrong and awful. I hope it's available, but, you know, someone not wanting hate speech on their platform, I don't think is censorship. You know, because they don't want to platform hate speech. But, you know, it's a matter of, like, you can't, you know, the government can't stop someone from having it available somewhere, but you can't force someone to platform hate speech.
Right. Well, I agree. I don't think you should be able to, in the same way, I don't think you should be able to force someone to platform it. I also don't think you should force someone to not platform it. It's the same right on both sides for people, you know. So it's people's choice to consume it, people's choice to put it out there, and people's choice to how it's dealt with, you know. And a lot of that stuff is subjective, you know. Like after living through COVID during America, and you know, so much information that was considered misinformation got people deplatformed, got people fired from jobs, now is just considered truth, and there's no backtracking or apology or hey, maybe this was wrong. And you know, it's like you know, hindsight is 20/20 sometimes. So it's more complicated than just we feel this is right, we feel this is wrong. And that, you know, that's why for me it's like when it comes to something like Twitter, and I have Twitter, I don't use it, I don't go on it, I don't tweet, but I think it is important for people to be able to share their ideas however they want, you know, because a lot of people have dumb ideas, and people are never going to agree 100%. But it's like you got to let people just have their discourse, you know.
Yeah, and you know, again, there's a big difference between, you know, the government stopping them from doing it, and then if people want to like I got the hell off of Twitter. I am not on there anymore. And I really hope that the platform falls apart and the man who owns it becomes penniless and sad. And
highly, you know, highly that's not censorship. His wealth, but.
That's you know, that's also my free speech, and you know, I can't be forced to, freedom of speech is not freedom from consequences.
Sure.
And those consequences, yeah, yeah. You know, like, and like, you know, the people that are like talking about like, I, you know, this is awful, you shouldn't say that, are not censoring someone. They're just also providing their speech that like, hey, you said that, and also you suck and should not, you know, I don't think you should say that is not censorship. You should, you know, whatever I want to say about someone who said that is also free speech.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we're able to find out what people stand for. So that they can be held accountable.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you know, it's just interesting to me, especially in like America, because, you know, like, you know, before Elon Musk bought Twitter, like the Taliban was on Twitter and no one complained about that. You're like, yeah, if we just have the Taliban on there, that's fine. Or like, you know, YouTube is showing, open air slave trades from Libya. We're not complaining about that, but okay. You know, it's just funny the way people pick and choose what they want to have an issue with, you know, it's a weird big to small thing that doesn't always quite work out in people's minds or in practical application.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing I found is that like, there's so much going on in the world that no one can react to all of it. And I think the best thing for people to do to make the world they want is to focus on the thing that that they feel they have enough passion and knowledge and ability to affect. Like for me, that has become, you know, freedom to read, speaking out against book bans.
Yeah.
And it's not something that I ever thought of before I wrote Banned Book Club. It's not something I ever really thought about. The only time before writing Banned Book Club, my only experience with it was when I was in middle school, I made a comic for the school newspaper about a friendly bug having adventures. It was called Wendell the Wasp, and it was cut out of the newspaper because the principal said it would offend white Anglo-Saxon Protestants. And I'm like, sir, I am 12 right. years old. I do not know what that means. It's about
yeah.
a bug.
yeah. This was not me, this wasn't being subversive at the yeah. Protestant demographic here.
Yeah, so it was like to me that was always a joke. But then once I wrote Banned Book Club, I wrote another book called Occulted about my friend that grew up in a UFO death cult and used banned books to escape. Like I kind of, after working with all these people that risked their lives and seeing how like for the freedom to read saved a country, it saved lives. Like, and then when I saw it happening in America, and when I saw like librarians being called groomers and pedophiles for having books like mine on the shelf. Like I realized like, this is something I care about. This is something I want to focus on. And like, yeah. Some people can say like, why do you care so much about this book being on a shelf, but you're not saying anything about this other thing? And I'm like, well, because there are people who are, working on that problem. They have far more knowledge than me. They have far more connections than me, and I'm going to let them, follow that situation, and I'll help how I can. But I feel like I have a good handle on this situation. I know the people involved. I have connections to people who are fighting, and I can, you know, I can focus on this. I can be considered a source of knowledge about this situation. So, yeah. You know, everyone kind of has their own little bit of expertise that, like, I'm going to speak up about this.
Yeah. Where, so, you know, your comic book, where, ironically, where does that go? I mean, where does that go? And ironically, where is it not able to go? You know, like, where are places you've tried to get that book and it's not allowed to be there because it in itself is banned because of content?
I was banned a couple times in Florida. It's been banned a few times in Texas. It was banned in Kentucky. And one of the things I've done is that every single time our book has been banned, I've become pen pals with the person who got it banned. And every single time I say, hey, I'm the author of this book. I just wanted to say, I saw that you had an issue with it. I want to know if you had any questions or concerns that I can talk to about it. And every yeah. single time they say, oh, I haven't read it. And so I'm like, but I typically become pen pals with them just because they love to talk. And I realize whatever question I ask them, they write a 10-page reply. And that's hours that they don't have to pan books. And then, you know, that obviously goes nowhere because I'm not going to change their mind because they're financially motivated. So also every single time I have flown out to speak at the place where I book, I haven't done Texas yet. That was supposed to be right now, but I had to cancel that trip. But I flew out to Florida, and that one was actually even stranger because I was asked not to speak. I was working with the local librarians, and like we were all setting up that I was going to go speak at the city council meeting where this guy would go every month and insult librarians. And then as I'm coming, all of a sudden the local librarians are like, actually, we changed our mind. Please don't come. This guy's too scary. If we let you speak, they're going to blame us and we're going to get fired. But then I ended up doing another event where it was like they invited people to come speak, you know, community leaders and faith leaders and reporters and, you know, local politicians and stuff. The one time I actually did get to go speak in front of like the people who didn't know I was coming was in Kentucky. I went out there after my book was banned, and I wasn't able to get a hold of everyone. Nobody knew I was coming, and I didn't know that they were voting on police salaries that meeting. So I get there, the entire police force is there, the entire firefighting team is there. Like, everyone is stone-faced and thinking about their future, and I get up, and I'm like, hi, I flew from Korea. I flew 7,500 miles to tell you books are good and you shouldn't ban them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I am going to be beaten up in the parking lot. I'm gonna come out and find a broken tail light, and I'll be thrown in a cell. Right. And then, but what happened is I walked off, and like the chief of police comes out in the hallway, and he's like, "Son, I need to talk to you." And I'm like, "Uh oh." And he's like, "I just want to tell you, secretly, I'm on your side. I can't talk about it around here, but like, good job." And then every single person in the room came up to me one by one to secretly whisper in my ear that I don't tell anybody, but they're on my side. And I'm like, if you all would communicate.
Yeah, if you would just talk to each other. Yeah. So what, yeah, obviously, now I haven't read the book. I know very little about it. So what is it that people are citing that makes them want to ban this book?
Well, one of the first guy in Florida, he said that in the official form, one of the complaints was that it mentions the title of other banned books. So even the title of a book, no. And also, these were books banned by a dictator in 1980s Korea, but he wanted banned because of that. And then he also said that it will turn Florida children into violent Antifa anarchists. And I'm like, sir, have you read the book? It's about nerds who like to read. they protest. That's true. But you know, they had reason to. And then another place in Florida, it was actually targeted by one of the founders of Moms for Liberty. Mm-hmm. And I asked her again. She said, I haven't read it. And she said, but I have heard that it's anti-police. And I worry that it will offend our school resource officers. And I said, well, ma'am, it's about Our book is about very specific police that worked for a dictator to illegally kidnap, torture, and murder children. So if I were your school resource officers, maybe I would be offended that you couldn't tell the difference. And she's like, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that it was a true story. I tell you what, instead of banning it, I'll make it required for every library. And I'm like, ma'am, you still haven't read the book.
Yeah.
Don't go from one extreme to the other. But yeah. Then I found out that was a lie, and she just secretly got it banned anyway.
So, yeah, sounds about right. The interesting. So, like, what books is it naming that they're concerned about?
Well, I mean, in the book, it's talking about it was mostly just political books. Like, there's a scene where they're all reading books. One guy's reading The Motorcycle Diaries. Another person's reading some Noam Chomsky, The Feminine Mystique, just banned books of Korean poetry. Really, I mean, it's just political books from 1980s Korea. It really is a book about dorks who like reading. There's a few cops being punched, but you know, this is murderers that
illegally addicted. I feel like in every installment of Fast and Furious, a cop gets punched. You know, I don't think that's the deal breaker that we should have in our media. Yeah. Like that.
Well, if you look at the books that are being banned, like they say it's pornography, but like what in the first place in Florida, right next to my book on the list was a book called Zen Shorts, which is a scholastic children's book about friendly cartoon bears. Mm-hmm. And it was banned because its story of radical empathy is incompatible with Christianity. So literally, the bears are too kind.
Interesting. Yeah, well, Jesus didn't make kind bears. Okay, that's an abomination to God. He made soulless killing machines, not kind bears. You're going to teach these people to trust the evil, and then next thing you know, they're going to be devil worshipers. Okay, Ryan, that's what happens.
Yeah. and then sometimes the books get banned are not because of what's in them. It's because not only did they not read them, they didn't read the whole title. Because when I went to Kentucky, right next to mine on the list, they had banned Are You My Mother, the children's book about the baby bird looking for its mommy. Okay. And I realized they had I couldn't figure out why. It's like, I mean, it's a baby bird. They had confused it with another book called Are You My Mother, a Comic Drama, which is a book for adults by Alison Bechdel. And I talked about that when I went in front of the council. And then one of the politicians was like, okay, that was a mistake. But I heard that they had Let's Talk About It, The Teen's Guide to Sex in the children's section. And I'm like, I don't think that's true. And she's like, well, that's what I heard. And I'm like, well, the library's right there. Should we go ask? And she's like, no, that's all right. And I went and asked, and I found out they had confused Let's Talk About It, The Teen's Guide to Sex with Let's Talk About It, The Sesame Street Guide to Conflict Resolution.
Yeah. A little different books. You know, maybe, you know, Ryan, I'm having this thought as we have this conversation. Maybe you just need to change the marketing on your book. Instead of banned books, name it like, the other books Jesus also loved. And then they'll just, you know, because they're still not going to read it. Like, I think we figured out they're not going to read the book. So all you have to do is have a title that makes them go, oh, we want this book for our libraries. And then they buy a bunch of copies of it, and then it's everywhere.
Well, from what I learned, they only make it three words into the title, so they wouldn't even make it that far to get to Jesus. So,
oh, okay. How about Jesus? Jesus loves these other books. Lead with the Jesus. That's smart. Yeah, let's lead with Jesus. Jesus loves these other books, and also you too. maybe again, I'm just saying, man, it's a PR thing. Sometimes it's all about marketing.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Well, these people are such, I've talked to so many of them. They're such dorks. I don't know.
Yeah. It's, you know, well, everyone has to have their cause that they're mad about these days. So, everyone's got to have something. Otherwise, what do you got? You know, if you're not yelling about something on Facebook or even alive, that's what I say. Well, where can people who aren't in Florida or Texas or Kentucky get your books?
Well, my books are anywhere you find books, but you can go to ryanestrada.com to see all of the things I do. You can find, there's Banned Book Club, No Rules Tonight, good old-fashioned screen spear. Occulted, I do a series of middle-grade adventure books called Student Ambassador. I've done Garfield comics, Flash Gordon, all that stuff. You can find all that on my website. And then really any I prefer people go to their local bookstore because they're struggling right now. And bookstores are great. Go to your local library. They got them too. Local bookstores and libraries are the best places to get any book.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Ryan, tell everyone where people can, you know, besides your website, social media, anything like that, where they can find you, follow you.
I'm at ryanestrada.com on Blue Sky. Ryanestrada.com, but spelled out with the DOT on Instagram. And all of my social media is linked at ryanestrada.com, the website.
Perfect. All right. Guys, go, buy this book and then send it to someone in Florida randomly. So they will be arrested. tip off the feds. Someone in Boca Raton's got a book they aren't supposed to have. What are we going to do? Go check out what Ryan's doing. Support band, books, support free speech, support people reading more, because that we need more of that in this world, period. Ryan, anything else before we get out of here today?
Make art, read art, have fun.
There you go. Cool. All right, guys. Well, we're going to get out of here for this week. Again, go to deescomedy.com. Check out everything going across the network. Live shows coming to you somewhere where you are probably soon. The comic book Kill Stan, issue number 1 and 2 are out. You can buy them on our website, inferno.earth. We have the digital versions up now, too. And number 3 is coming in hot. So look out for pre-order information on that very shortly. Coming to probably a comic convention near you too. So, and that's it, guys. We're going to get out of here for this week, for the Social Hour and for Ryan. I have been Deese. Thank you all very much. And we will see you all next week.